What do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
Oh, what do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
We're back to that, huh? I say to you, what do you feel like doing tonight? And you say back to me, I don't know, what do you feel like doing tonight? Then we wind up sitting around your house with a couple of cans of beer watching a hit parade on television.
Let's go to the movies.
Director!
This is a frightened city.
Wait for it! Director! Cut!
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for a new film talk show, Film Sociology, with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Film lovers, no, it's not 120 minutes for you. You don't remember 120 minutes, do you?
Yep.
Unless you do.
Yeah, I do.
With Dave Kendall.
Kennedy was on, too.
Oh, gosh, let's not talk
what?
About her.
She was fun.
Yeah, as far as silly Republican deep VJs are concerned. Anyway, hello, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. You heard you two just a moment ago. I'll explain why in a moment. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. And I'm also on Facebook, working the board, Melissa Davis.
Hello.
Who apparently likes Kennedy for some reason.
I didn't say I like.
Oh, okay, you just acknowledge her existence.
Right.
That's just right up there with liking her. And just a reminder, here at Film Sociology, we're not vampires, we're goths. That's all there is to it. Thank you, South Park. All right. Well, we got a couple films to talk about. Filmmaker Joe Lavelle is sitting in with us. He's got a new film that's out called In the Death Room, and we'll talk to him about his work and his association with Mr. King.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for being here. We're Steven, not BB or Albert.
No.
Or Freddy. Well, Albert and Freddy are dead. So that's
the king of horror, the master of shock. Stephen King.
Oh, so Paul Verhoeven?
No.
That's a whole other shock.
It's a different shock.
That is a different shock. We heard you two earlier, besides the music from Kill Bill, and the reason why is, well, there's one big film that opened today, and I didn't see it, but I'll get to that in a moment. However, opening in Indianapolis today is the documentary called It Might Get Loud. Now, get ready for this, music fans, especially guitar nuts out there. It is three mini biographies, as well as a roundtable discussion, followed by a little jam session featuring Jack White of the White Stripes, The Edge of U2, and Jimmy Page of Jimmy Page fame. Because why not? And it's from the director who gave us An Inconvenient Truth, and we'll give it a listen, see what you think.
Trying to get the sound that I can hear in my head to come out of the speaker. It's my voice. That is my voice.
We're going there to have a chat, but it just so happens that the instruments are there as well, so who knows?
I plan to trick both of these guys into teaching me all their tricks.
It's going to be very interesting.
When the three of us get together, what's going to happen? Probably a fist fight.
This is the hall where Levy Breaks was recorded. Brings back some memories.
I play really old guitars, plastic guitars.
The neck's a little bit bent and it's a little bit out of tune. And I want it to be a struggle.
This instrument was just calling out to me. 20 minutes in this store just defined the sound of the band. I love effects units.
It's very
Nightmare that he will use the same sound in 23 songs.
This is what I'm actually playing. The rest is the foot pedal, the effects, the whole thing. Might get loud for a second.
We're all attempting to share something with another human being.
Every night that we went on stage, it was living, totally living.
Total commitment, getting across what you wanted to say.
It just comes from the creative spark, really.
That family of storytellers. You're supposed to join the family, become part of it.
That's why I took up the guitar in the first place.
Nice. And, you know, who says you need to buy a guitar?
Gotta get the cows in. We don't get enough cows here at Film Sociology. This is a documentary. It's funny, and Joe, I'm glad you're here as a filmmaker on this. I mean, there have been a number of documentaries over the last several years where they go into, you know, a niche market, whether it's Spellbound or King of Kong or Twisted, the balloon twisting documentary, not the bad Ashley Judd thriller. And it's kind of cool just to see this little bitty world. And that
I think you're going to find that more and more, no matter where. I mean, as the directions of technology grows and more high definition cameras are available, we can go into small places and actually film
right. The
behind the scenes, where it usually took a whole day or two to even complete those things. You can come right in during it with a small little handheld camera and do what MTV was doing 20 years ago.
Right, and I think this is becoming more accessible to people. I've had film PR people go, here's a documentary about balloon animals or the balloon art. And I'll go, sure, why not? Now, on the flip side of this, because this is where it's a subject matter that I really dig a lot, and so I don't know if anybody else outside the world is going to enjoy this or not.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they're going to enjoy it, but you're looking at saturating the market on a certain genre, and sometimes I don't think it's a possibility you could do that, no matter how available any type of film or any type of product, no matter what it was, can be saturated to the point where people just don't want to watch it anymore.
Right. I'm fascinated. It's almost like the director took a dartboard and threw it and picked up these three guitars. Three guys that I have a great deal of admiration for. I've played all three of them on the other show. The White Stripes are obviously a very unique sound. You two, there's a great sequence where the Edge is playing for you one of his signature sounds, and then he takes off all the effects and pedals, and this is what it sounds like. And Jimmy Page is Jimmy Page. I love Jimmy Page, and he's a very private, reclusive guy, so anytime he can make something that doesn't involve collaborating with Diddy on a Godzilla movie, that's a major event.
It's a great poster, too. Like,
yes.
Every college kid wants that poster up in their room. It's a fantastic look.
So it's fun watching these three guys get together, and you know, there's a little mini biography of all three in case you're not familiar with the White Stripes, or you just know U2 for its, you know, Nobel Peace Prize winning singer, or you don't know anything else beyond Led Zeppelin 4. I think the one complaint that some people had, like my colleague Scott Shoger at Nouvelle, was there wasn't enough jam, and I would love to, I'm hoping the DVD has more footage of these guys sitting in a circle playing guitar.
Well, or the special edition will. I mean,
yeah,
that's what you always have to wait for.
So anyway, I really dug it. I'll ask you, is this something that interests you?
It is, but I think, like you were saying, I'd want to see independently each band. I mean, I'm more curious on what U2 is as a band when they're on their last tour than I really would be as some guys jamming around for, you know, 2.5 hours or an hour and a half.
Fair enough. So, yeah, this. Somebody else besides me, go see this and see if it's maybe because I'm just naturally jazzed about the subject matter. Hello, I really enjoyed it, and hopefully you will too. So this is my reaction for It Might Get Loud.
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll move on to the other film that opened today, and apparently we have my beloved producer has the nugget of musicality to go with the subject matter. Thank you.
We've
Yes, from 1973, the title track to the song and the film Ben, sang by Michael Jackson, a nice, soothing, heartfelt ballad about a rat. And by the way, the song that they never played during his death march, in the, you know, that took a couple of weeks and unloaded to the Staples Center. The concert documentary This Is It opened Wednesday. And I will admit, there was an advanced screening of it the night before, and I was emceeing a concert at the Slippery Noodle Inn. So, and I generally try not to be the film critic that talks about films he hasn't seen. That doesn't happen in this city. The big three, yeah, maybe. But, however, I got an uneasy feeling about just how this film got together. I understand, you know, and for those who don't know, it is a behind-the-scenes look of rehearsals of Jackson's. Jackson was going to put on a 50-show tour in London. I think the kind of proof that he still got it. And I understand the whole marketing campaign is let's move past the alleged child diddler who settled out of court aspect of Jackson's life. Let's get back to the fact that he's a singer. I understand. Ike Turner wrote a biography. Michael Jackson's going back on tour. And of course, he dies. And what are you giving me a look?
Not the Ike Turner comparison.
Well, different
no.
things. No. Both really wanted a really clean third act in their life.
I guess, though, it's like we can get into the whole argument of he was never prosecuted or he was never found guilty of a crime. And
not for that crime, but he did wind up doing jail time for other things.
Ike Turner did.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Not Michael Jackson, though. That's what I'm saying.
Then why did he settle out of court?
Because I think he just didn't. Yeah, I can't speak for someone that I never met.
Right.
Like, I don't know. But I just assume you just don't want to deal with it anymore if you have that much money.
I understand that. But yeah. When you also say to a press, even if he is British, that, you know, you sleep with children.
I know, but I think he was wacko jacko.
Yes, and
but
we
not
blame.
In
and,
that way.
And by the way, the fact that Joe Jackson's not in the inheritance couldn't happen to a better guy.
Right.
I'm not forgetting Joe. Joe's not getting any Dad of the Year awards either.
No.
But he settled out of court.
Well, you know, we can all wonder.
I said alleged.
And we'll never
I said alleged, yes. Didn't I? Yes. So.
And I think the kid didn't the kid recant? Or didn't that happen recently?
And he's also living with Roman Polanski.
Oh,
so
goodness.
He's real.
Sorry.
Now that did it just about go to court.
Well, right. But we'll get to that one a little later on. No. So. Back into, so it just feels like because he died, Sony spent $60 million to get whatever footage they can get their hands on, and it's an exclusive. It's only in theaters for 2 weeks. Boy, that's a Disney thing to do back in the 70s. And then it'll come out, I'm sure, as a super colossal edition on DVD. Now, David Edelstein from Fresh Air reviewed it, gave it a favorable review. He said it's not a complete... pay no attention to the singer behind the curtain thing, that he shows the fact that Jackson does have some vocal strain. It's not perfect. It's not, he's still amazing. It's still the bare bones about rehearsing a tour.
Do you really think that's why the movie was made to begin with? The movie was made, and why it is that he was an icon for every reason. He was his own entity. He was his own thing. The way he passed and how he passed just gives that even more intriguing and more power. No matter who you are, if you had any footage, it could have been 2 hours of his feet, and people would still go see it because the man's a legend. And
right.
For the biggest star anybody will ever know.
But I got a feeling, and I wish I was the one that came up with this, is that what the film has the feel of is something that would be a special feature on a DVD, not the actual footage itself. Now, Kenny Ortega, who directed this, directed the tour, and you can thank him. He directed the High School Musical movies as well, one of my daughter's faves. So, I guess so long as it's not sheening over everything and just showing a little warts and all of here's a 50-year-old guy trying to sing and do moves that he's used to doing when he was half his age.
Right, and with kids. I mean,
right.
All of his entourage is all half his age, and can out. You know, would you think that would be outperformed? That's only more of a realization of how good he was.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Or if it's the musical equivalent of Willie Mays with the Mets, for you sports fans out there. So, okay. But we all agree, Joe Jackson, not in the will. couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Yeah, it was probably the right choice.
Poetic justice. Good, just desserts. So.
Can I play Thriller?
What?
Come on. Can I play
Tomorrow's
Thriller?
Halloween. You should play some Thriller.
Yeah, let's do what every radio station does. It's pretty obvious stuff.
You gotta play Thriller.
I don't gotta do anything except what Lynn and Emma say, and my producer. Jeez, there we play. It was directed by John Landis.
And
let's not forget, I'm sorry, yeah, there's a better director who directed Mr. Jackson. His name is Scorsese.
Oh, yeah.
He directed Bad.
That video, well, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
No, I like Bad. But I don't know. You can't. The Michael Jackson videos are amazing.
And
like,
there's Wesley Snipes, who probably didn't pay taxes for his job in Bad either.
That's true.
Not alleged. Actual. See where?
Did he go to court for that?
Well, I think I think he did.
Oh, okay.
I think they realized, you know, even though you're making straight to DVD movies, you're still getting paid for those. So, yeah, we'll have to check on it. Remember, Ball State journalism law, right there. Alleged. I said alleged. So, but I think Wesley has to pay.
I think he's got money everywhere anyway.
I'm sure, yeah, like in his mattress.
Yeah,
in his Blade costume, all those. His Wong Fu wig.
Yeah, if you're Wesley Snipes, you're not looking for your tax money underneath.
I think he's like Aretha Franklin now. He's just asking for cash. And that's not alleged, that's actual. So, all right, let's take a short break, and then we'll get into the DVDs. If you have a question or a comment, or you just want to berate me for even though I use the word alleged, you can email me at msocey, that's msocey at wfyi.org. I'm also on Facebook. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and wfyi.org.
Hi, I'm J.B. Lane.
And I'm Jason Wild.
Join us this Saturday night at 10 o'clock on The Point for a special Halloween blast from the past.
Yes, our spooktacular edition. We'll have artists that you've never heard of, well, or maybe you've heard of, but have forgotten the songs, plus some Halloween favorites.
We also have a sequel to a song that you are familiar with, probably not as familiar with the sequel, though.
And a very cool Rate the Remake.
On a blast from the past, the Halloween edition.
Coming up Saturday night at 10 on The Point.
Are either one of these any good? Sir?
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
And the video store is open. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey at wfyi.org. I'm also on Facebook, and the show is available as a podcast. So there, finally. Okay, it is Halloween Eve, or Devil's Night, if you grew up in the greater Detroit area. I grew up in Flint, which is far enough, but hopefully there won't be any buildings ablaze tonight. There's so many abandoned buildings in Detroit. Hopefully that won't happen. But the last couple of weeks, of course, have been we've had some scary movies that have popped in and out, and Joe Lavelle is here with his wonderful wife. Two people who were at my film discussion at Easley Winery last Sunday. Thank you for coming.
It was
then.
A good time.
Thank you for coming now, and thank you to Meredith Easley and the rest of the gang at Easley Winery for the hospitality, or horse brutality, if you're a Rocky Horror fan. And by the way, Rocky Horror tomorrow night at Fountain Square. They're going to be doing two shows, an all-ages show at midnight, or 8 o'clock, whew, an all-ages show at 8 o'clock, and a grown-up 21 and over show at midnight.
So this is live?
Live.
Live.
So I think they're going to show the movie,
oh,
and then whatever happens.
Did we find out about throwing things?
We did not. No. So I'd say, friends, don't be a teenager in the 80s from Michigan. Use your best discretion. Be kind.
Isn't
to
part
the
of it though? You're supposed to
well,
throw
yeah,
things.
Yeah, but there
bring
are
bring your squirt guns.
Well, there are certain.
Right.
What I learned that there were certain things you could bring in, like squirt guns with water, not chocolate sauce, newspapers, rice. What the heck is that?
That would be feedback.
Is that the gremlins in there?
Somewhere else.
You all right there?
Should
I continue talking?
That's the fire alarm.
Wow.
That's the fire alarm. And you're not supposed to hear it in the soundproof studio, but there it is.
Should we put in some Zeppelin?
Let me go
tell you what,
check
let's
things out.
And I'll play a cut from Led Zeppelin, which features Jimmy Page on guitar, who is also in the documentary It Could Get Loud.
It could get hot in here, too.
It could get... Oh, jeez. tell us about... tell us your favorite Zeppelin album.
My favorite Zeppelin album?
Please.
That's like saying, what's your favorite baby or child?
Do it anyway.
Every Zeppelin album is my favorite album. It all began with LPs. And every LP is a great LP when you're a Led Zeppelin fan.
That's the immigrant song from Led Zeppelin.
Woo.
Wow.
It's Halloween. It's scary. You never know what's going to happen.
Did somebody feed the gremlins water after midnight or whatever?
Fire alarm went off, and we have kids here at our haunted house right now, so they were escorting all the kids out.
That looks good.
Like the fire alarm was going off. I think we're okay.
Are you sure?
I don't hear it now.
Okay.
So I think we're all
hey,
right.
Joe, come on the show. Have a good time. Get burned to the ground.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yes, come to the coast. Have a good laughs. Jeez. All right. Yeah, well, at least I got the Zeppelin in. That's good.
I can't believe you kept it on the air.
Well, we have to keep going.
Yeah.
We have to keep going.
It's all right.
I didn't see Mary Hartnett moving.
I didn't either.
Someone's got to be on the air.
She kept talking.
It's like a band in Titanic. All right. So before we were rudely interrupted by technology, we were talking about scary films recently. And by the way, Saw 6 still not screened for the press, so we just moved on. However, there was a film that was, I believe, not screened for the press. And of course, when that happens, then it's an opportunity for me to catch up on it on DVD. And a movie that opened this week, which is perfect for the week of Halloween, is the thriller Orphan, which stars Peter Sarsgaard and Vera Farmiga. As a couple who adopt a Russian girl played by 12-year-old, she's actually 12, Isabel Furman. And, well, as the campaign tells you, something's not quite right with Esther.
Well, we're seeing kids for the first time this weekend. I'm ready to adopt.
Adopting an older child is not an easy decision.
My name is Esther.
And why aren't you down at the party?
I've never really seen the point of it. I guess I'm different.
There's nothing wrong with being different, you know.
This is an extraordinary little girl. She's very mature for her age. You seem to have made quite a connection.
Is this your house?
It's your home, too. You're just as much part of this family as Danny and Max.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
This is our new student. I'd like you all to make her feel very welcome today.
Oh, look. Little Bo Peep texts me. She wants her outfit back.
Esther? What are you doing?
Something's happening to cause Esther to feel this way. I think there's something wrong with Esther. We need to know what we're dealing with. Trouble does have a way of finding her.
What kind of trouble?
Dr. Varava, I'm calling from the Sarn Institute.
I don't understand. How can they have no record of her being there?
There has to be some explanation.
The orphanage has never heard of her.
I don't think Mommy likes me very much. It must be hard to love an adopted child as much as your own.
Your hospital.
My God.
I love you, Daddy.
I can't do it anymore.
I have a surprise for you, Mommy.
What are you doing? What did you do?
That's the story of love. That's the glory of love.
Esther?
Esther.
Thank you.
By the way, if you must know, it's from the same director that gave us the remake of House of Wax. Take that for what it is. Okay. It's interesting that in the last couple of years you've had some horror films in which you've actually had name actors in it, like Virginia Madsen in The Haunting in Connecticut, Tony Goldwyn in the remake of Last House on the Left, still not necessary, and now we have Peter Sarsgaard, who very fine actor and son of a variety of things, and Vera Farmiga, who I first noticed in The Departed, and she was in Boy in Striped Pajamas. And by the way, this is not her second Evil Child. This is her second Evil Child film. She did one called Joshua a couple years ago, also known as The Devil's Son. So I hope she's doing okay. This is an example of taking what is a horror movie premise and going a little too far. And I'm not being a dattering old fool with my black socks and you damn kids with your, you know, House of Wax remakes and your hula hoops. In our day, John Carpenter had Jamie Lee Curtis running around screaming and Donald Pleasance being crazy, and we liked it.
And that was scary.
That was scary, right. But there's a plot point that I don't want to give away because I do actually respect the concept of movies moving their storyline and try not to give up too many secrets. But the film tried to be more than just what it should have been, a modern-day version of The Bad Seed. Of course, The Bad Seed, the excellent Patty McCormick movie of the original Scary Child. That being said, and there's also something about the film where, and the character Isabel is Russian, and, you know, there's the whole dark secret about the Russian orphanage and the orphanage that she has in the States. Well, let's put it this way. The orphanage, the adoption system in Hollywood doesn't fare well. Doesn't fare well in this one. It reminded me of White Oleander, which was the movie with Alison Lohman and Michelle Pfeiffer and Robin Wright Penn and Renee Zellweger. Like, boy, the California adoption agencies must be really ticked off because here's this young girl that has three really mentally defective parents, step-parents, foster parents to go through. And I'm actually with the film for the first half hour. You know, the whole getting to know the family and the other kids. You know, the mom had a miscarriage and wanted to adopt somebody quickly. The parents adjusting. Vera and Peter have a couple of nice scenes together. And then the nun from the orphanage comes back and informs them that some mistakes were made. And I understand that's kind of, I guess it's sort of obligatory dumb horror movie logic.
Well, you know, it's one of those, in my experience, there's those movies that have fantastic trailers. And I put the orphanage right there. I mean, you see it and you want, it looks scary. It looks like something that is really, but somewhere inside there you have this feeling that, that 30 minutes is about as far as it's going to go.
Yeah, and there's some really unsettling stuff. There's a couple moments. There's one involving a brick and a pigeon. I'm like, you know, you could have just taken out about maybe 10 frames of that. And I talked to a colleague of mine who is not a fan at all of the child in peril concept. And that happens here, especially with the youngest daughter who also is deaf. So a combination of that and the question came up, the actress who played this is 12. She and this is not her first film. She was in that other family fun fest known as Hound Dog, the Dakota Fanning white trash rape movie. She's fine in that one, I think. But the question is, does Isabel Furman become the kid from The Shining? The great story on that was he wound up having to go to the therapy after working on that motion picture.
He doesn't do anything either.
He's no, like, I don't. I think film he, that's it.
He's, I think done. He's a no. Some type of a mathematician, right. Isn't he? Something like that.
Also the subject of pie. but yeah, he's kind of the exact opposite of say the Willy Wonka kids who. Like the kid who played Charlie will only go to schools, doesn't want any publicity, doesn't want anybody else to know about it. He'll just talk to the kids directly, and that's that. Yeah. Anyway, but apparently, according to reports, the parents of Isabel Furman are trying to push her in, say, a Jodie Foster way, because Jodie Foster turned out all right. Her admirers, not so much, but let's not forget, because she also did Freaky Friday and Candle Shoe when she wasn't playing a 12-year-old prostitute in Taxi Driver. So there's just a bunch of unsettling imagery, and there's a moment where, it turns to if The Bad Seed was written by Tennessee Williams. Yeah, they kind of go down that path, and that's really icky. And I guess some people want to see that. I don't know who. But it does start to fall into the manipulative, psychotic child movie, so, you know, and just big dumb thriller where there's a pursuer and there's a pursuee. So I'm sure somebody's going to like this a lot more than me, and that's fine. You can have it. So that being said, this is what I think of Orphan.
No.
Okay, it's been a few minutes and we haven't had the alarm go off. That's good. Also on DVD this week is the latest Woody Allen film, Whatever Works, which stars Larry David.
Love him.
Yes.
Yay.
We like Larry David. No, it's fine. You are allowed to chime in. Your mics are on for a reason.
Yes, I love him. Thank you very much.
Wow. Are you the next Cheryl Hines? You like
no.
him that much?
If I could have Cheryl Hines' job, that would be like the best job ever.
And you,
Larry's my type of guy. Like,
really?
Yes. Yes.
Really?
Very much like, reminds me a lot of my husband in some ways. Yeah. Like, weird things bug, but I'm the same way. Like, weird things bug us. Like, I don't know. Just, like, the scene when he was driving in the car, and he was like, I feel very odd in this car. I don't like sitting in the seat. Like, it doesn't make any sense, but I like how he's real neurotic, I guess.
Do you have car issues, Melissa?
No.
Are you sure?
No,
what kind of car do you drive?
Yeah.
I got an old Mitsubishi Lancer.
So you can only ride in those and no others?
Right. No, I like his
this
little...
This BMW
car.
Will not do, my friend. This seat is too comfortable. And
I feel warm.
Yeah, have you seen that episode where he's sitting in the car and he's like,
I've seen
very
bits
odd.
And pieces.
He likes the car, but he just doesn't feel... He feels very uncomfortable.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
No,
whatever.
I don't have
I like neurotic people, I think that's what I'm trying
that's
to say.
That's how we get along so well. Anyway, this is one. It's Larry David's in the Woody Allen role. He plays a brilliant man who is mentally superior to everybody, and he winds up taking under his wing a young Southern drifter played by Evan Rachel Wood, and of course winds up marrying her. And yes, Evan
what?
Rachel Wood. Did I tell you who wrote and directed this?
Woody Allen.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And, you know, you shouldn't be complaining. It's Larry David. It's not Woody, at least. He's got the common decency to cast somebody else in the role. And besides, I'd rather see Evan Rachel Wood with Larry David than say, Marilyn Manson.
What is she, 20?
She's 22.
He's like 62.
So it's an action film.
Ew.
Does this surprise anybody? Why should you watch Entrapment while you're
That's
at
wrong.
It? It's not wrong. Well, you still like Larry.
Yeah. Well, I'm 30, so it's okay.
There's oh,
only
it's
a
okay.
30
it's 20. Oh, I see. Because there's a 3 in your
That's
age.
Gross, though. I'm sorry. Well,
I didn't write it.
Continue.
I'm just telling you. Jeez. So.
Oh, Woody Allen.
I know. But you know what? His disappointing stuff is still better than most of the stuff that's out there.
Well, and it's nice that every time I hear his name, I'm like, oh, what shenanigans has he gotten into? And then
shenanigans.
And then it's like, oh, it's another movie I missed.
I have to give it to you. He's, what, 70? And he's still pumping out a film a year. And you know, some are obviously better than others. And this one's kind of middle of the road. And this was a script he'd written in the 70s. He originally wanted Zero Mostel in this. Now, Zero Mostel is not going to be with Evan Rachel Wood. He probably would have been, I don't know, Diane Keaton or somebody else he was having shenanigans with back then. But in this one, the acting really overcomes what is at times a dated script. It's not the first time we've had somebody, an older intellectual person, wind up with a young cutie in his films or other films for that matter. But then the mother shows up, played by Patricia Clarkson, who we adore here at Film Sociology, and her dad, Ed Begley Jr., shows up, and there's issues there. Michael McKean has a small part in this as well. And it's just kind of, it's fine. I think it's worth renting. I think you should see it just because your guy is in
it. Does he kiss her?
I'm not telling you. Oh, stop. You
didn't man
cringe.
Hands.
You didn't cringe at all during the descriptions of Orphan, but now you're getting all the willies over whatever works.
I think you put those two movies together, you'd have a hit.
I don't want to. No, I don't really want Larry David, 12-year-old girl. That's just bad.
Old man hands.
But this did spawn a very funny article in The Onion. Yes, our favorite news source here at Film Sociology, but it was the week the movie came out, it was 19 things Woody Allen just won't get, and one of them is the South. Because Patricia Clarkson, everybody in this movie is from the South, and he's never been there.
Does anyone have an accent? Or is it like an awful, ridiculous Southern accent?
No. Evan Rachel Wood is fine, and Patricia Clarkson's fine. And
okay.
No, everybody in the film, acting-wise, it's very good. I mean, Larry David gets to be another cantankerous old man,
mm-hmm.
Only it's it's written by Woody Allen as opposed to him. So, no, everybody in it is fine. The acting overcomes kind of a weak script, especially and weak by Woody Allen standards. Still not as bad as anything else. I think that's probably the least enjoyable of Woody's more recent films, because Christina Ricci, as much as I enjoy her work at times, is a real shrew in this film, in that film, in anything else, not this one. So over, I mean, I guess if there are Woody Allen fans, and everybody's looking at me, that that will go see it regardless, and I think this is probably another one of them. But compared to, I think it's just a step back to his comfort zone after going to Europe, and I really enjoyed the European films for the most part. You know, Match Point and Vicky Cristina especially. And Cassandra's Dream, and then Scoop. Scoop is just, it's fine. But anyway, overall, this is what I thought of Whatever Works.
Now that was a good movie.
You're right over there. I know it's fun over there. Melissa's microphone makes her look like Lemmy from Motorhead. Also on DVD this week, and I'm surprised she hasn't come in yet, because, yeah, as we explained earlier, we have, at the time of the show, we have our open house for Halloween,
yes,
for trick-or-treaters, and somewhere in this building, film sociology's kid film correspondent Emma Sosi is wandering around dressed as Ariel from The Little Mermaid, but she'll remind me to tell everybody she really liked Ice Age: Dawn of the Dinosaurs,
aww,
which is also on DVD this week. And yes, everybody's back. The voices of John Leguizamo and Ray Romano and Dennis Leary and Queen Latifah and Simon Pegg, because you have to add more characters with each sequel. And this time around, Sid, that's John Leguizamo's voice, steals some dinosaur eggs and winds up in the dinosaur world, because the dinosaur age and the ice age meet just like it does in animated features head on. So, who cares what the old guy thinks of the film? It's
did
okay.
Did he see it in 3D? Was it?
No.
Was it, did it come
Emma saw it in 3D. I did not. So she reports.
I'm a sucker for 3D. Well, anything in 3D.
And I'm also wondering if there are certain films they just threw a couple of moments on and then put the glasses on you and that's it.
So? It's
okay.
3D.
Battle for Terror? Did you see Battle for Terror?
No.
That was in 3D.
Was it?
Yeah. Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs?
Oh, yeah.
You did see that.
And what was the other? The dinosaur big Will Ferrell movie.
Land of the
Lost? Land of the Lost in 3D.
You're the one who saw that.
It was awesome. It was 3D.
Now, the visuals were awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Story-wise?
Oh, it was...
You can't even look
really,
at
me. Something else.
So, okay, so we found your weak spot.
It is. It's totally 3D.
Okay. Well, this one, it's kind of... And by the way, I don't need to hear the Lou Rawls ballad ever again. They kind of play that to death with a little scratch and a little female scratch. So, kids will like it. There's, by the way, Queen Latifah's character is pregnant, so that means there's going to be a baby woolly mammoth. Kids love babies.
I
don't know if there will be a fourth one.
No.
Maybe.
This is the third. Wow.
I know. First one I liked because, yes, I wish our other filmmaker was here. Mm-hmm. Because the first one reminded me a lot of Three Godfathers, the John Wayne movie. It's about three outlaws that find a baby.
Okay.
That's pretty much the first Ice Age. And
like
then,
three men and a baby.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. For your generation, Three Men and a Baby.
Right.
Which was originally Three Men and a Carriage. French film, Lou.
Okay.
That's fine. And then they made a sequel, and they put in Queen Latifah's voice, and now they have more. So anyway, it's more of let's add more things to the movie. There's more action. There's some 3D stuff. And when you watch it in 2D, you're always sitting there going, yeah, that's a 3D moment.
That could be so cool if I had glasses right now.
Well, I have glasses all the time. It doesn't really do
well,
anything.
Well, when you're home, you're like looking through your DVD case with a little glasses, and if
do they come
there,
with that?
Because
Coraline did. I have Coraline.
That's a perfect example. What a great 3D movie that was.
Yes,
amazing.
Yes. So, anyway, Emma liked it more than me. So you can play whatever response you want, Melissa, because you usually do.
Potter, don't flatter yourself.
No, I don't.
It wasn't that great.
Okay, well, it's fine. Sometimes you do. It's okay. Let's see. Also out on DVD this week. Oh my goodness. Let's see. Speaking of John Wayne, Angel and the Bad Man. I have to give Lionsgate credit for actually putting out movies on DVD that were made before any of us were born. The documentary The Achievers, The Story of Lebowski Fans. Got to get my hands on that. Oh, because it's Halloween, Black Devil Doll. For those people that don't want to see Child's Play anymore, there's now a Black Devil Doll, not chasing Karen Black. Also, and I got to see this on the IFC channel, and now it's out on DVD, and I highly recommend it. The documentary series Monty Python, Almost the Truth, the lawyer edition. Really cool. Lots of really good interviews with everybody, including archival interviews with the late Graham Chapman. Lot of fun. So must have for any Python fans. Oh, also on DVD this week is the Latino family movie Nothing Like the Holidays with everybody's favorite Latino actor, Alfred Molina. No, he plays everything. But John Leguizamo's in this, Luis Guzman, Elizabeth Pena, and it's the, Latino families have problems, too, during the holidays. The Sam Fuller film collection is out, and I guess we only have the Criterion collection of the Costa Gavras film Z. Highly recommend. Love Criterion stuff. I'm hoping to pick that up. It's a great political thriller. The documentary You Weren't There, A History of Chicago Punk, 1977 to 1984. And we have a very brief edition of If You Owned a Blu-ray. So the question is, if you owned a Blu-ray player, Joe, do you own a Blu-ray player?
Yeah, I do.
Well, I'm asking anyway. You're not the first. Really, sorry. So here's all right. The point is, if I throw the title out, would you buy it on Blu-ray? Right. Does it necessarily mean you like it or not, but is it good enough to become a Blu-ray player? Are you ready?
Yep.
Stargate.
No.
Why not?
I've never...
Too much Jay Davison?
I like my Star Wars. I have my niches, and Stargate never even really entered that field.
Stratosphere. Yeah. Portal.
Yeah, either one.
All right, let's take a break.
The Blackula stuff. That was good. Yeah,
like now, boy, if that comes out on Blu-ray, I might have to get a Blu-ray player. And, I mean, actual Blu-ray, not the video game with Blu-ray in it.
That's the one
right.
I have.
I know, that's the one you have. So. But I got a image to maintain. I'm the so-called host here. All right, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to talk about In the Death Room. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Hi, I'm J.B. Lane.
And I'm Jason Wild.
Join us this Saturday night at 10 o'clock on The Point for a special Halloween blast from the past.
Yes, our spooktacular edition. We'll have artists that you've never heard of, well, or maybe you've heard of, but have forgotten the songs, plus some Halloween favorites.
We also have a sequel to a song that you are familiar with, probably not as familiar with the sequel, though.
And a very cool Rate the Remake.
On a blast from the past, the Halloween edition.
Coming up Saturday night at 10 on The Point.
Roger! We're not alone.
We got guests.
You got what?
Guests. Guests.
Guests?
Yeah, guests. People. We've got guests coming over.
When?
Now.
Who are you?
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like, your opinion, man.
Opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one.
That's Jack White doing his version of Sitting on Top of the World from the soundtrack Cold Mountain. Remember it being number 2 on my best 10 list that year. Of course, Jack White, one of the 3 guitarists in the documentary It Might Get Loud, which opens this weekend. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. I'm your host, Matthew Soucy. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoucy, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. And I'm also on Facebook. And before we get to our guest, Joe Lavelle, who's the director of In the Death Room, I do need to pay tribute to a great character actor, one of my favorite that guys. Lou Jacoby just passed this week. He was in his 90s. And there's a couple of things that he's best known for in my book. He was the florist in Arthur. But he was also in, if you ever saw speaking of Woody Allen, the film Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Afraid to Ask. He was in the segment about the man. The question was, are transvestites homosexuals? And in this one, he is a straight married man who winds up putting on a dress at upstairs during a dinner party. And when it looks like he's going to get caught, he's dangling outside a window and falls. And now he's walking the street in a dress, and then somebody snatches his purse. And, well, early 70s hilarity ensues. It's actually a very good segment. But the clip I'm going to play for you is from the wonderful 1982 comedy, My Favorite Year, with Peter O'Toole. And in this one, he plays Uncle Morty, the uncle of Ben, played by Mark Lynn Baker, whatever happened to him. And he's bringing Peter O'Toole, Alan Swan, home to dinner in Brooklyn. And you'll hear a little bit of Lainey Kazan, and Rookie Karaoke, I believe, is in this as well. So here's a tribute to Lou Jacoby.
Uncle Morty, how odd to find you here.
Why? I just caught the 7:45 elevator down from 6.
I assume Aunt Sadie is here also?
Not yet, but she'll be.
Uncle Morty, say hello to Alan Swan.
I didn't catch the name.
Mr. Swan, may I present my mother, Mrs. Belle May Steinberg Karaoke of Brooklyn, New York, and Miami Beach, Florida, for 2 weeks each and every winter.
Benjamin, why didn't you tell me your mother was so lovely?
For me?
No, for me.
Al?
Ma!
What?
It's not Al. If I bring Capone or Jolson, then it's Al.
Jolson's coming? So, Mr. Swan, now that we sat nice, broke bread together, shared a glass of wine, I feel I know you a little.
Morty, I feel I know you even better.
Good. Then you won't mind if I ask you a question.
Uncle Morty?
What are you worried? It's not personal. What was I, born in Minskapinsk? I know my way around.
Morty, ask your question.
That paternity rap a couple
Morty.
Of years ago.
Did you stoop her?
Morty!
Oh, wow.
Shut
did
up.
You go all the way?
Oh, Morty! Morty.
Thank you for all your work, Lou Jacoby. You will definitely be missed. Now, on that note, we bring in filmmaker Joe Lavelle. How are you, Joe?
Good.
Joe is the director of the film In the Death Room, which is, plug the website, sir.
It's intothedeathroom.com.
By the way, the screener you gave me, my name's on it.
Oh, yeah. I specially made it just for you.
Thank you. That creeped me out a little bit. It was like The Ring.
You pop it in.
My name's on this.
How did I know?
How did it know? Like a thermos.
It's the new Blu-ray special.
Oh, great.
Has your name already.
Now, tell us a little bit about this, especially with this film, of course, has a link with Stephen King.
Yeah. It was a really cool. I made my first short with a couple friends of mine. And we did it in a studio in a day. And then after that, I kind of wanted to find stories and different authors that might let me use their story. So I emailed just everybody I could possibly think of, and I got a reply back from the office of Stephen King.
Now, wait. Who else did you email? Name it for us.
I emailed Daniel Steele, and who else did I email? Tons. I literally opened up my library and went 1, 2, 3, 4.
Is there ClyveBarker.com?
Clive Barker, yep.
Really?
And, everybody. And then that was the only person that came and replied back. And they ended up having a program where they would allow you to do a short or one of the short stories and use them. So I originally wanted a short story called The Colorado Kid, and they sent back and said, no, we can't really use that. But there's this other story called In the Death Room, which seems to mirror my first short.
Okay.
So it was a real easy way, a good transition, a great start, for sure.
And, really, and how much did it cost you?
This budget was about $2,000.
Okay.
the first film was $50.
Well, yeah.
So
the good old days.
But, yeah, and then, in testing alone is just, you know, that's where I love to do. My very first thing was with 35mm camera, where I took one solid frame,
nice.
Moved a little bit, and it was with people instead of with, like, claymation, and then I animated that into scenes because I really couldn't afford a video camera.
Right.
So, but I had that 35mm, and it worked out pretty good.
Excellent. Tell us about the film. Tell, for those who don't know the
well,
story.
The story comes from the book Everything's Eventual, and basically it's South American prisoner who gets interrogated for 15 minutes, and then the book, the storyline, the idea, I guess, came from seeing these movies all the time where nobody ever really escaped from the dungeon. It was just those old 50s black and white films where the guy being interrogated never really made it out. So Stephen King wanted to do something where it had a happier ending.
Right. And by the way, I'm glad you brought up the 50s political thrillers, because it's more like that and not Saw. And,
right.
Because I'll admit, when I looked at the cover art, you know, because you have a dingy warehouse and Stephen King's name is attached to it. We also should remember Stephen King also wrote other things besides stuff in the horror genre. So, right. Yeah, it's more of a political drama.
And it's very dialogue-driven. All the actors are from Indiana. Chris Spurgeon we got from here, and Caleb Nunez was a brand-new actor. He never acted before at all, and I pretty much found him for his looks and said, that's the guy I want in my movie. And
spoken like a true director.
Convinced him to be a part of it, and we shot for 3 days, and it was the most stressful 12-hour days,
sure.
3 days in a row. You have all your eggs in one basket, and hopefully you don't crack them all.
Right.
So we didn't really know what we had back or had at all until we got into the editing room.
Now, where'd you shoot this?
We actually shot it in, my first intention was to shoot it at my studio, which was just south of Lilly there, and had about 15,000 square foot, just a great studio. And we did auditions there. We had everything prepped for filming there. And then the week before the filming was set to shoot, they came and told me to get out because they're demolishing it and putting up a strip mall. So I lost my studio, but they got a great strip mall, and I lost my location.
Is it really a great strip mall?
It hasn't been built yet, but there's great dirt right there. If you go look past there, everybody loves, I'm sure sisters love
it. It's going to be some of the finest dirt with a subway on top of it.
And it's awesome dirt. I go back and just rub my hands in it and go, oh, thank you, strip mall people, strip mall gods. So my dad, my pop, pretty much went on this rampage calling all of his buddies and all of his friends and trying to find a place, and somehow he got in contact with the mayor of Southport, who had a building on Southport Road called the Oddfellows Building, and so we went to scout that location, and it was perfect. So the space was perfect, the size was perfect. I want to have boom mics falling in my shots,
yes,
you know,
you.
Things like that, that.
And by the way, if they show up, it's not his fault. Blame the projectionist.
It is the projectionist.
That happened. I'm sorry. The most recent story I remember, it was the remake of The Omen, and people were laughing. And man, you just, there's no purpose of going up in front of a full movie house during the movie and say it's not the movie's fault. It's the projectionist. So. I'm sorry. So, yeah, it actually does look like a South American. So, you know what? Indianapolis is the new Vancouver.
I really love Indianapolis. I think that Indianapolis is a hotbed of artists. I mean, the soundtrack that we got from here, we pulled from three or four different people. Dusty McMillan, who's like a Xeno, is his alter ego, and just an amazing artist. And he put together a great soundtrack along with Chris Armina.
You can look at the boxes.
Yeah, anyway. Steve Darborough. Yes, our Darborough
Fair. Yep.
Yeah. And they, everybody's collaborated for knowing what the project was, knowing how what I've done in the past, and really set for 3 days of really grueling work. And I mean, it was, we had even the food that we had that day was all donated.
Oh, so. It was, your food was also intense.
Yeah, it was all hot and spicy.
It was buffalo everything. So it sounds like, how are you on the set when you're directing actors? Do you rehearse a lot, or
no,
you get it?
No,
do you Lars von Trier your actors?
With this stuff, it was me and Jeremy Harvey, who is my assistant director. We storyboarded only the very first half of it.
Okay.
We knew that we had a time period to actually film. And we wanted these shots. So we storyboarded the first half. The second half, we kind of let the actors kind of go with whatever they want to do, and we pulled from that. So when you watch the finished project, you can see that the style actually changes from a very shot-driven movie or film to a very handheld type of feel, which is what I kind of wanted from the beginning. But when you're doing a small budget with anything, you've got to be open to grab and take
sure.
from everybody.
Well, I can tell you from watching, I didn't feel nauseous.
Oh,
so you're already up on the Bourne trilogy. It's all right. So where are we at with the film now? Have you submitted it? You've sent it around?
Yeah, we sent it to about nine festivals right now that we're ready to hear back from. And then we have about 25 that we want to submit to that we're just trying to find funding for right now. And we're going to have a big screening in Shelbyville at the Strand Theater, which the Strand Theater is an amazing, amazing place, amazing people. They actually allowed us to film inside the very first couple shots during the opening sequence was at the Strand. And they allowed us to come back on November 18th and actually debut it to all the cast, because the cast hasn't even really seen it either.
I mean, I saw it before them.
Yeah.
I was going to hate them. I'm not going
to
tell you.
So, you have to come. You have to come down there. And
what day of the week?
Yeah, it's November 18th. It's a Wednesday.
It's a Wednesday? It's possible. It's possible. Melissa, make a note.
Yes.
We can go together. Well, we talked about, this will be good in lieu of the drive-in experience that Film Sociology still needs to do maybe next spring. So tell us a little bit, because you brought it up. Tell me a little bit about the $50 film.
Oh, That was done with
my first play was $70, so I want to hear about the $50 movie.
Well, the $50 one, you can see it on YouTube if you look up Mojo 7, spelled out 7. Mm-hmm. It'll bring up my list of all my independent little test films, and in that is The Devil's Bride. And the whole budget of that $50 went to little shadow puppets that opened up the film. And then after that, we shot everything inside my, was my studio, and with just a whole bunch of friends, and it was the coldest day of the year. It was like negative 20 in Indiana. No snow, no nothing, just bitter cold. And it was a great time.
Are you sure?
It was a great time. I mean, I tortured all the actors that were in it, but I had fun.
Nice. All right, so what directors do you dig?
I like P.T. Anderson a lot.
Wait, Paul Thomas Anderson or Resident Evil P.T. Anderson?
No, not Resident Evil.
Just checking? No, just Paul Thomas. Yeah, thank you, because I can't remember how the other one is billed. So, yeah, P.T. Anderson.
Right. Good. And then David Fincher. David Fincher, I think, is one of the most fantastic directors of our time, of my generation.
And gives arguably the best commentaries on any DVD.
He does. I mean, there's not, you know, as an independent filmmaker, and you go and you watch a commentary, and he's like, yeah, we picked this camera up specifically. He'll tell you the camera. He'll tell you the model. You can't buy that information.
And you know,
but I did on DVD.
Well, yeah, that's where. No, and also his are chock full of stuff. I'm one of those dorks that, you know, if I'm going to pay $39.95, I'm going to watch everything.
Right. And then with him, it's a kind of a disappointment with the Blu-ray stuff that a lot of his stuff's not on Blu-ray yet. You've got The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, and
did you like it?
Yeah, I think I did like it. I liked it. I wish it was. I think a lot of people really gave it a hard time. They gave it the Forrest Gump comparison when really the story was pre-Gump. And
I know, sometimes
when people speak.
It didn't help that Eric Roth also did the screenplay. But I think it's not his best work, but I think he also got a lot of flack because he got the Oscar bone tossed at him.
Yeah.
Just like Danny Boyle. You know, Slumdog Millionaire is a good film. It's not best picture, and it's not even Danny Boyle's best film. It's not even his best film involving children. I'm partial to Millions.
Yeah.
But I think it's part of that is he finally got his just due, and he should have got it for Zodiac.
Or Seven. I mean, really, Seven is a classic.
And
you
it
don't
still holds
make
up.
A, yeah, you, I mean, every movie that's a thriller about, you know, with the big twist is based off Seven.
I'm irritated at people that didn't see Zodiac. Nobody in this room. I'm not irritated at you, but I mean, I think it was also a thing of people were expecting another Seven because it involved a killer.
Yeah,
and it was more like all it was
amazing.
Yeah, and it was more like All the President's Men. It was like one aspect that was like Seven, the day-to-day grind of investigating a case.
Right.
That was really cool. So.
And I mean, and technically his shot setups, his follow-throughs, and just they're amazing. I mean. I guess you can overdo a boom or a boom lift shot, but
I mean, like going through the keyhole in Panic Room.
Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes I guess, but still, it's David Fincher, and you can't debate that.
Somebody this week's Ask the AV Club in the Onion was, you know, scary stuff. You know, what scares you? And you know, they have the staff, and then there's like the 860 some odd responses, none by yours truly, of course. But one of them mentioned Jake Gyllenhaal in the basement. With the dude with the voice of Roger Rabbit. So go rent Zodiac for God's sake. If you have anything else, plug the website again so people can find
it. InTheDeathRoom.com or InTheDeathRoomMovie.com. If you want tickets for the premiere, please contact me at InTheDeathRoom@gmail.com.
November 18th.
November 18th.
In Shelbyville.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for coming in, Joe. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Well, on behalf of Melissa Davis, I'm Matthew Sosi. Have a safe Halloween. Don't do anything stupid and keep your treats wrapped up. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Silent breathing people!
Zardoz has spoken.